One out of every 8 women has a risk of being diagnosed with breast cancer. I'm Jill Nadeau, this is the Larry Mueller Show, and we're talking about breast cancer and how you can stay up to date on your screenings. Our guest is Dr. May Elazabi. She's an associate professor at the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Elazabi is also associate chief of breast imaging at University Hospital and a member of the UW Health Breast Center. Are you having trouble accessing breast cancer screenings, or what questions do you have about mammography? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Elazabi, thank you so much for coming in today.
Hi, Jill. Thank you, and thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Let's start with what actually causes women to get breast cancer.
So it's very interesting that we have so much research into breast cancer. There are some recognizable risk factors that we know for breast cancer, and some that we're still studying and waiting on the research to tell us what really causes breast cancer. We know some of the risk factors that are very notable in research is the family history of breast cancer, especially genetic mutations. So some of the genes that we inherit from our families can be one of the strong indicators of breast cancer. But it's also important to note that up to 70% of women who get breast cancer don't have a recognizable risk factor. So it is unfortunately a risk of just being a female. And with older age, you have that risk of breast cancer. But there are ways that we can help improve our risks for breast cancer and improve the chance of finding it early, as with screening mammography.
And just to be clear, men can get breast cancer too. It just doesn't happen that often, right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And men also can be affected with family members if they have the genetic mutation.
And how do you find out if you have that genetic mutation?
So the National Institute of Health recommends that women, starting at the age of 25, start talking with their primary care provider to figure out what their risks for breast cancer are. So to really delve into their family history and see if they are at what we call higher than average risk. If that's the case, then they might need to start screening early. It might be more closely monitored by their providers. But those that are not higher than average risk then can start the screening recommendations based on the general population guidelines.
And let's talk about mammographies a little bit, which is the main screening tool, I would think, at this point. And they seem to be changing. They always seem to be changing. What are the latest recommendations?
Yes, I'm really happy that we're meeting now, because it's important to update our listeners to the most recent updates in breast cancer screening. I agree, it's been confusing for many of our patients.
Yes.
I think the data shows that starting screening at 40 years of age and screening annually provides us the best chance of finding cancers early and preventing, giving us the best chance to prevent early deaths from breast cancer. The USPSTF, so the United States Preventative Task Force for Screening, has updated the recommendations. It's still in draft form, but now they have acknowledged that starting screening at 40 years and screening every other year really catches the cancers early, especially for some of our various population groups, for example, Black women, that provides a higher chance of finding cancers early and mitigating some of the cancer deaths from breast cancer, especially in that patient group.
So if you do have a mammography and there's something that's maybe a little suspicious on it, but it's, you know, your radiologist looks at it and they think it's fine, do you then, is it suggested you go back every year then, or is it still the 2 year?
Not necessarily. So I think you brought up a very important point, is that there are different types of imaging tests that we can get. Screening is when we don't have any concerns about our breast, when there's no pain, no lumps, no thickening, no changes. And that's usually conducted every year, every other year, when you're what we call asymptomatic. But when we have symptoms, when we have changes that are happening to the breast or any concerns, then the types of tests we get are called diagnostic imaging. That's when we go in for a more closer look at the area of concern. We sometimes get the mammogram and ultrasound as well. And you get to meet with a provider that talks to you about the findings and what has caused that area of concern in the first place. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that workup might require a biopsy, which is taking a small tissue sample from that area to get us to the final answer. And sometimes we don't need to do that, and we can reassure our patients that they can go back to their regular screening. It does not necessarily mean that they have to do more intensive screening, as you asked, but it just means that we have resolved the concern that they had in the first place. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the advances that have been made with mammography in the last few years? I've noticed that between the last time I had gone in and this year, it seems different. It seems less painful. So what's some of the changes that's been going on?
That's great. I'm happy that you have noticed the change. So definitely some of the advances, the mammography or the machine that we use to image the breast tissue, we use that for screening and for diagnostic workup. Definitely the most significant advancement over the last few years has been the what we call 3D technology. It's not really 3D, but other names for it is digital breast tomosynthesis or tomosynthesis alone. And this has definitely allowed us to see through the breast tissue and help really find cancers early and also prevent having patients come back unnecessarily for extra views. Definitely the equipment itself, the way it's positioning and how the breast is compressed has improved to allow for less discomfort from the procedure itself. So I'm glad that you noticed that.
I was pleasantly surprised. So, and I mean, I think that whole mental image of this is going to hurt does stop people from probably making that appointment, doesn't it?
I've heard that from a lot of our patients. And really, when they come in, they realize that discomfort is only for very few seconds. It's not as significant as they might think it is. Sometimes even taking over-the-counter like Tylenol before coming in half an hour can ease a little bit of that discomfort. Mm-hmm. And definitely our technology has come a long way.
It certainly has. I think at this point, it's not any different than getting your blood pressure taken with the pressure of the cuff. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So you're talking about this 3D. Now, do most or all of the screenings taking place use that technology now?
I would say most places have it or have it available. It is really a technology that has really spread almost everywhere in the country. In some places, they still ask patients if they would prefer the traditional way, the regular digital mammogram or the 3D. And that has to do with some variations in insurance and reimbursement. So it's important for patients coming in for their mammogram to know what is covered by their insurance plan. That helps. I would say, especially here in Wisconsin, we've had really good reimbursement for the 3D technology or tomosynthesis. And it's considered by many of our insurance carriers as standard of care, and it does not incur any additional expenses. But it's good to know, mm-hmm. Depending on your plan.
Now, am I right in thinking that the Affordable Care Act did say that insurance companies do have to cover mammography? And I'm assuming that doesn't cover the 3D. just is that the truth? Is that the case?
Yes. So screening mammography is a test that is covered by all insurance companies with no out-of-pocket expenses. There are a lot of variations, however, depending on out-of-pocket expenses and deductibles based on insurance plans. It does not, the Affordable Care Act does not necessarily dictate that. So it is, as I mentioned, it's helpful for patients to know whether it's covered or not. Mm-hmm. Medicare does cover 3D with no out-of-pocket expenses.
Okay. What are we looking at down the road? I mean, are we close to some other things? What's going to happen?
So I think what is really clear in breast health care is that we understand that not all women are the same. There is trends towards what we call personalized medicine, which is to tailor the screening tests that you get and potentially treatments if you do get cancer, depending on your genetics, your body type, your tissue type. And so more and more, we're understanding some risk factors might not apply to all patients, for example, dense breast tissue. And a legislation that was passed through our Wisconsin state legislators really helped to inform patients of their breast tissue density. It is one of the risk factors that we know that impacts risk breast cancer risk, and patients can, I would say, mitigate some of that risk by adding additional tools to the mammography for screening, what we call supplemental screening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about self-exams and get into treatment for breast cancer itself. So you and I definitely want to stay with us. We're talking about breast cancer screenings and treatments with Dr. May Elazabi. She is an associate professor in the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And she's also associate chief of breast imaging at University Hospital and a member of the UW Breast Cancer or Breast Center. We'll be back with more right after this look at the news. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about breast cancer prevention and treatment today with Dr. May Elazabi. She's an associate professor in the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Elazabi is also associate chief of breast imaging at University Hospital and a member of the UW Health Breast Center. What questions do you have about screenings for breast cancer, or do you want to know more about treatment options? Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Dr. Elazabi, let's talk a little bit about self-exams. Are we still supposed to do them?
I think the general recommendation is just to be aware of your breast health. We understand the complexity of performing an exam, and it's really hard to be very vigilant about doing your self-breast exam and be able to identify if there are changes or not. But as long as you're aware of changes that are happening in your breast, that you don't see any skin changes or nipple changes, or if there are any changes that you notice, to seek help and go in to see your healthcare provider. That's what we are asking of our patients. Mm-hmm. The actual breast exam, what we call the clinical breast exam, should be performed by a trained health provider that know what to expect, what's normal, and what is a change for our patients.
Okay. So it's not like it used to be where you have a card in your shower and every month you, you're supposed to do this. So it's just basically just to be aware.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Okay. What about the when we do have these once a year when we go to our yearly physical, I'm assuming. And is that in addition to then having the mammography?
Yes. Okay. So every woman should have a clinical breast exam at her annual health checkup. The time to start screening for mammography really depends on the patient's risk. So average risk now with the updated guidelines is to start screening at 40. But for women that have increased risk for breast cancer, then those patients might start their screening earlier, as early as 25 years even.
Okay. We do have a call, so let's go to Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt. What's your question?
Yep. Hello. So this is more kind of from my wife's side. She has cancer that runs on her maternal side, breast cancer. And I'm wondering what the long-term risk of routine mammograms from ionizing radiation exposure through X-ray or CT-type tomo imaging versus other modalities like ultrasound or MRI. You know, she starts having mammograms at 40 and has them every year for the rest of her life. What is the long-term risk of inducing a cancer from exposure to ionizing radiation through X-rays?
Okay, Dr. Lazabi, I would think you probably get that question quite often.
Yes, and that's a great question, Matt, and thank you for asking that question. With every healthcare intervention, there is what we call the risk-benefit ratio. So we look at what are the benefits from screening mammogram versus the potential risk, as you mentioned, of radiation. The amount of radiation that we get from our mammograms, even the 3D mammograms, is very, very minimal. And the repeated exposure does not increase the risk for breast cancer. And that's through many, many years of studies. The advantage that we have with breast cancer screening is that it started back in the 60s. So we have several decades of data that shows us that this is a very safe option for monitoring and early detection of cancer. And on the other hand, it really has huge benefits. It does decrease the risk of having breast cancer or dying from breast cancer with up to 50% in some cases. So when we look at the benefits versus the risks, definitely not substantiated risk of radiation, especially with the low doses of mammography, and huge benefit for identifying early cancers.
Thank you, Matt, very much. And as in most cancers or all cancers, early detection really is the key for a good outcome, right?
Exactly. We know that cancers that are detected when they are at what we call a very small stage, so stage zero or stage one, these have up to 98% of survival. So definitely an improved outcome as compared to when we identify them at a later stage.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phone. We have Helen in West Salem with a question. Hi, Helen.
I'm wondering if 40 isn't a bit late to have the mammogram, because I know of a person recently, she was 38, she was pregnant, and the baby was like 8 months along, and they discovered she had cancer in her breasts. And they took the baby a bit early, and but they gave her chemo right away. And since then, she's had both breasts removed, and she's on chemo and so forth. But I thought, 40, isn't that a little late in this day and age? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a very unfortunate situation that we see. What you mentioned is a distinct type of cancer, what we call pregnancy-associated breast cancer. Some patients are at already increased risk of breast cancer and don't know it. And that's why here at UW Health, we're trying to screen patients using some questionnaires to be able to identify those at increased risk for breast cancer earlier to see if we can advise them to start screening earlier. That being said, I think pregnancy-associated breast cancer sometimes does not happen in patients with known risk factors for breast cancer. It is rare type of breast cancer, but it is unfortunate, as you mentioned. And for those patients, there are some theories of pregnancy that there's transiently can increase the risk for breast cancer that drops after delivery and after a few years. But I completely agree with you. And I think it's very important, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, and the general guidelines right now is that patients at the age of 25 to start talking about their risks with their provider to know if they are the type that need to start screening early, or is the 40 the appropriate age for their history.
Okay, great. Thanks for that question, Helen. Could you explain the different stages of breast cancer? Because, you know, we hear 1, 2, 3, 4. What does that actually mean?
Yes, and the American Joint Committee on Cancer has really revised the breast cancer staging in 2018 to reflect, as I mentioned, the concept of precision medicine, that not all cancers are the same and not all types of cancer are the same. In the past, we used to stage breast cancer based on what we call anatomy, where is the size of the cancer, whether the cancer has spread to some of the lymph nodes nearby or in different areas, or if it has spread outside of the breast. But now we have identified that not only what we call anatomic staging, but there is also the biologic staging of the tumor. The types of cancers that we get, some of them respond to hormones, some don't. Some have affinity to proliferative biomarkers that indicate that this cancer is dividing rapidly, others don't. And so staging right now is a complex process that your oncologist, your surgeon, your radiologist all go through these steps to get you to the accurate stage. Some of it is the size of the tumor, as I mentioned, and whether it has spread to the lymph nodes or nearby structures. And some of it has to do with the type of tumor and how it, what we call biomarkers, what type of tumor it is and what type of receptors or hormones it responds to.
So diagnosing those different stages will then pave the way for the treatment that's going to be used?
Exactly. And it then directs us to the best treatment for your specific situation. So it allows us to better tailor the treatments that we provide to our patients based on their individual types of cancers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the treatments that are available. And there's a lot out there that's fairly new and obviously working quite well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So generally, treatments for breast cancers are divided to local therapy and systemic therapy. Local therapy means surgery, where part of the tumor is removed, or not part of the breast is removed, which is includes all the tumor cells, and radiation, which is often directed at the tumor bed where the tumor was growing. And then there is systemic therapy, which includes the chemotherapies, the drugs that are administered to control the growth of the tumor, some targeted therapy, more hormonal therapy or endocrine therapy, that also are dictated by the type of tumor and whether it responds to hormones or not. And a combination of these treatments really depends on your stage and type of treatment. And that's why we really encourage our patients to not necessarily listen to all the stories from their friends who've had breast cancer or look up information online, because it does not necessarily apply to them. It's right now we have very tailored treatments that emphasize individually what type of cancer and what best treats your type of cancer.
What are the best ways, if you've been diagnosed, is it a good idea to get another opinion or two as far as your treatment goes?
I think it's very helpful for patients to hear the different opportunities for treatment and options. As you mentioned, there are so many different types of treatments that are out there, a lot of clinical trials that are available, which are a great opportunity to get the latest treatment options. But I would probably caution from doing it too much. I think getting one or two second opinions is reasonable. I would definitely advocate going to large academic centers where they might have clinical trials available, because that really does increase your opportunity to get the latest in drug developments or treatment developments.
Okay. We do have a caller, Patty in River Falls. What's your question?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we're fine now.
Okay. Thank you very much. My sister has been dealing with breast or milk line cancer for maybe 10 years now, and it's really awful. And I'm just wondering if the doctor could speak to that at all, if there are any new ways to handle it. They just keep removing parts because she develops tumors, and it's just a really bizarre hydradenoma, I think it's called. So that's my question. If there have been any new things happening, I believe when I looked into it, it's like older white women get it, but she developed it in her early 40s and is still dealing with it.
Okay. Well, thank you for that question, Dr. Elazabi. What? Tell us what it is. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, I believe it's a very rare type of tumor, and I would say it is more of the locally growing tumor. So it doesn't fall under the typical breast cancer categories. I would say probably, it's definitely unfortunate because some types of these cancers, they continue to recur locally rather than spread in other areas of the body. But still, nonetheless, they are, a concern and they need to be surgically removed. And I would recommend going into a large medical facility because often they might have different options or approaches to controlling the tumor. I apologize. I don't know if there are any offered updates and treatments, but I would definitely advocate that you would seek second opinions or that your sister would.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Patty. We've got Mary in Ashapin with a question. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. Yeah, I'm wondering, when I had my last mammogram, I think it was when I was 75, they said I didn't need to get any more. Is that, do you feel that's true or not a good idea?
That's a great question. And I'll say that many of the recommendations that were created were based on our life expectancy many years ago. A lot of the trials that tell us the data on the efficacy of screening in patients is really based on a lot of the trials that were performed in the 80s and in the 90s. And really, our life expectancy right now exceeds the 75. And I'm sure you are healthy and a vibrant patient. And I would advocate that you talk with your doctor. When we look at the recommendations, we know that we don't have a lot of data to support screening for women above 75. But if we know that you don't have any other health concerns, that we do advocate our patients to continue screening, especially when we know that, as I mentioned, we have a very healthy and vibrant community and patients above 75, and we shouldn't advocate for no screening in that age group.
Because you can still get cancer, breast cancer, after 75, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the treatments. I think probably mastectomy comes up first when people think about treatment for breast cancer. How do you help people make the decision whether or not they should have a mastectomy or there's a different treatment that they should be considering?
When patients are diagnosed with breast cancer, as I mentioned, it's a joint process between your radiologist, oncologist, surgeon, where we stage our patients. Your healthcare team will provide you with their best evidence as far as this is the best treatment option for you. Mastectomy is often, which is the removal of the entire breast, is often recommended when cancer is too large to remove or involving multiple areas of the breast tissue. that is probably the standard of care. And I would say that when you have the discussion, or when our patients have the discussion with their healthcare team, we are often providing them with all the different options that are that provide them with the best outcome. There are sometimes patients who come in thinking they want a mastectomy, and we tell our patients that that's not necessarily the best option for them. We can really get to the same results and the same benefits if we do what we call lumpectomy or partial mastectomy, which is just removing part of the breast tissue, often associated with radiation afterwards, sometimes not. And that can give them the same results. So that discussion really happens after we've talked about how big their cancer is, what is the best treatment option for them, and then deciding together with them what would be the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Those who choose to do mastectomy or where this is the best treatment option for them, there are a lot of reconstructive options for reconstructing the breast tissue afterwards.
And that has advanced amazingly too, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. There are different reconstructive surgeries that can be performed, and having a good plastic surgical team, part of your healthcare team, is one of the things that we try to make sure that our patients meet with them in situations where we think that mastectomy might be ideal.
In another vein, you know, the fight against breast cancer is, there's been some, you know, racial and ethnic groups that experience higher rates of mortality. What's being done to kind of fix that, basically?
I think definitely identifying some of the risk factors that we can modify. So as we mentioned earlier, there are some risks that we can't control: our age, our genes. But there are some risks that we can modify, which is our lifestyle, staying healthy, staying active, controlling and being in a good weight range, you know, avoiding some of the lifestyle choices that can put us at increased risk, as smoking or alcohol use. So trying to lead a healthy lifestyle, staying up to date with our screening recommendations, being aware of our breast health. These are a lot of the things that we can do to help fight breast cancer and continue to spread the word, encourage our family members, our friends to be on top of our managing our health and taking care of ourselves.
Have you run into any common beliefs, myths maybe of that are associated with breast cancer that you would like to just address in this last minute or so we have?
Yeah, some of the myths that I would say science has not 100% proven is the use of deodorants or antiperspirants, wearing bras. These are some of the things that just the studies have not really proven to be true. And again, I think leading a healthy lifestyle and trying to seek healthcare if you notice any changes is critical, I think, in the fight for breast cancer.
And are there some websites that we can go to talk about this or learn more?
Yes, the American Cancer Society has great resources for patients that talk a lot about breast cancer screening and diagnosis and prevention, genetic testing. Also, the UW Health Breast Center website is a great resource for locally available resources here within the Madison, Greater Madison area. And we have an excellent multidisciplinary breast center clinic for our patients.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a very busy person. So we've been talking with Dr. May Elazabi. She's an associate professor in the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Join us tomorrow. We're going to celebrate Valentine's Day by talking about bird mating calls and how zookeepers play matchmaker for conservation breeding. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for being with us.